Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Gift of the Unexpected, Discovering Who You Are Meant to Be When Life Goes Off Plan by Jillian Benfield. Narrated by Jillian Benfield. To Andy, thank you for loving who I was before the unexpected, who I was during, and who I am now becoming. Introduction. The Gift of Before and After. My life fell apart with a 20-second phone call. The words on the other end of the line took the air from my lungs. My cheeks instantly became wet, and my legs went weak. Some events are so momentous that they erect a divide in the timeline of our lives. There is a glimpse of time that ends life as we know it and begins a whole new one. It's called the before and after moment. My before and after moment came when I was 27 years old and pregnant with my second child. I could never go back to the time before those words were spoken. Life would never be the same. I would never be the same. The words came from my husband, Andy. The doctor called me and, it's not good. I'm coming home. My heavy, 22 weeks pregnant body slid onto the cold kitchen floor tiles of our new rental house, many of our belongings still unpacked. I dropped my phone and frantically cried, "Oh no, oh no, oh no, this doesn't feel real, this doesn't feel real, this doesn't feel real." It's as if my mouth had to repeat what my head and heart didn't want to be true. Years ago, if you had told me I would one day write a book about how this moment was in reality the greatest gift of my life, I wouldn't have believed you. But I have done just that, because my before and after moment led to both the unbecoming and the becoming of me. I believe your unexpected moment, your unexpected life, holds the same potential for you, but only if you resist society's insistence on overcoming the unexpected and choose instead to undergo it. Do a quick Google Images search of the word overcoming, and you will see people standing atop mountains, hands raised over their heads, and a stance that claims victory. Now, search undergoing, and you will find people about to be cut open by surgeons. The healing they need can be found only by digging deep into the dark spaces within. The newness comes only by confronting the pain. And we know it's not over when the patient awakes. The patient will have to pursue recovery. Yes, the undergoing I'm suggesting is like that. A synonym for the word overcome is suppress. This is the message we so often get from our Western and church cultures. We are expected to go from positive to positive. We're expected to be the PR team for Jesus and ourselves by feeling our pain for the shortest amount of time possible. We're expected to push through the sadness and grief and to bring our hashtag good vibes only. We're expected to return to our normal selves as quickly as we can. That's the mark of the strong, we're told. And to be honest, it's probably easier now than ever to overcome our unexpected circumstances. We push through by stuffing our feelings down and numbing out with Netflix, social media, and wine that can be delivered to our doorstep. And we may just accomplish what we set out to do. We may just get to that metaphorical mountaintop and show the world how strong we are because we have overcome the sadness. We have come out on the other side of grief intact, despite our crushing experience. But if we do this, we come out on the other side wrapped in sameness. We miss out on the opportunity to be transformed. The real mark of strength is when we do the difficult and slow work of walking through the dark place where we find ourselves. We must sit with the hurt and confusion instead of suppressing them. But then we must allow them to be our guide. We must listen to the voices while in the depths, the voice of God, the whispers of our own hearts, and the input of others who have also spent time below. That's because listening is essential to receiving the grace necessary for transformation. If we are brave enough to take in our present surroundings and eventually work through them, God can use our unexpected circumstances to help us first rediscover our core selves. He does this by helping us tear down the false constructs we've built atop our identities. If we let Him, He will show us what parts of ourselves we've added that need to go, what parts need to stay, and what we need to acquire. And when the dust has settled from the demolition, we'll begin to see ourselves more clearly as wholly His and wholly beloved. Only when we start to see ourselves as our Creator always has will He remind us that all new life begins in the darkness. Just as He formed us in the depths of the womb, He can shape us once more in this unexpected place. By feeling our pain instead of ignoring it, we can connect to the aching of the world from which we were perhaps once distanced. Through this work, then, we become more whole and more real than we were before. We not only find our healing, but begin to see how God wants us to bring this healing to the world. That's when we take first steps out of the darkness and toward that mountain peak. We take them in the same skin we wore when the unexpected first hit our lives, but with a newness running through our veins. The unexpected pain may have broken our hearts for a time, but with time, we are broken wide open to possibilities anew, possibilities greater than ourselves. And when we get to the summit, I don't think the snapshot of us will show our hands raised in victory, believing we've made it. Instead, our faces will be pointed toward the sun, knowing this is only the start of a new beginning. This is when we ask God to show us the way forward. This is when we ask Him to set this good transformation to purpose, purposes beyond the confines of our individual lives. This is when we climb back down the mountain and start participating in this life we get to live in a whole new way. This is when we have fully realized the gift that can come from the unexpected. Ourselves made new. Let me stop right here, not for the last time, to say you don't have to classify your unexpected circumstances as good. As you will see, I was misinformed about my before and after moment. But I have had other unexpected moments as well. Open heart surgery for my older son, a miscarriage, and then a fetal intervention surgery, and a horrific medical injury for my youngest child. I do not consider these events to be good. But what I have experienced is this. God can make good come from the unexpected heartaches we experience in this life. And most of the time, that good is a change from within. I originally started writing this book trying to answer a question. Was my life always meant to end up this way? I was searching for the God of certainty and instead found the God of surprise. He surprises us with the beauty of the unexpected and the grace He provides when the unexpected is anything but. Through the years and through many unexpected events, I've discovered that God does not promise us a steady life. He promises resurrection. He said, "We will have trouble in this world, but to take heart, because He has overcome the world." This promise is not just about the grand finale of our lives when we take our last breath and catch our first glimpse of heaven. It's also about the many resurrections we will experience in the here and now. This vow of God is intertwined with all our unexpected endings and beginnings, because it is often through the unexpected that our Creator shows us who we are and points us to who He wants us to become. Maybe your before and after experience left a gaping hole in your life, and you just can't imagine anything good down there. I can't tell you this hole will be filled the same way it once was. But if you are willing to take this journey, if you are willing to walk back past the point before everything fell apart so you can move forward changed, something good can come from this. We are known and loved by a God who gives beauty where our deepest, unexpected hurts once resided. And he often does this through the work of transformation. When you experienced your before and after moment, did you notice that your world came to a screeching halt, but somehow everyone else's kept turning and turning and turning and turning? I did. When Andy called, the doctor had just let him know the blood screen on our unborn son had come back positive for a genetic anomaly. But we didn't know which one, and we needed to return to the man's office to find out. My mom was driving Andy and me through the winding back road to the hospital when we passed a group of young boys riding scooters and laughing as though all was right in the world. Their happiness highlighted my despair. I stared ahead, dazed, wondering how this could be. For you, maybe it was getting the dreaded medical results at your desk while coworkers laughed and chatted away. Or learning of your spouse's betrayal and only seconds later hearing your baby scream because she needed to be fed. Or perhaps you are walking to your car after saying goodbye to a loved one for the final time when parents strolled by holding new life filled to the brim with possibilities. When others' lives carry on with the usual threads and weave in new ones, but your life is suddenly barren, it can pierce your soul. Your threads are now frayed, and you're left unable to fathom how it can all possibly be. But having been through my moment, when time paused and hung and ached, I have come to believe that the world that keeps cruelly spinning is God's way of pointing us to hope. I have ultimately learned that the unexpected can lead us from the depths of desolation to a resurrected self, a resurrected way of living God has called us to. Chatting coworkers can act as a reminder that we will one day again hum along with life. A hungry baby can remind us that although empty now, we will one day be full again. And the loss of a loved one will always hurt. But a couple high on possibilities can remind us that one day we will dream anew. First sunset, then sunrise. First storm, then rainbow. First death, then resurrection. That's what they say. But of course, it doesn't happen just like that. We experience hours of inconceivable darkness, strong winds that threaten to knock us down, and the hopelessness of an unopened tomb. Yet, right there in the midst of it, God is making something new. This book is about inviting him to make something new in us when the unexpected leaves our lives and ourselves unrecognizable. Because after we've done our time processing, grieving, and lamenting, life begins to stir. The dawn breaks, the clouds fade, and the stone rolls away. Yes, life moves on, and one day, so will we. But hopefully, we will take steps toward a life different from when we started. This new and different life is the gift of the unexpected, and I've written this book for those willing to unwrap it. But it's like one of those supersized packages at kids' birthday parties where the giver wrapped it in layers of paper for the receiver to remove before finally reaching the prize. This gift requires our time, effort, and patience. What we find inside is not our old life, our old faith, our old perspective, but ourselves, wholly loved and wholly transformed. The gift of the unexpected is divided into three parts. In part one, we'll see how to do the work of returning to ourselves and seeing ourselves as our Creator sees us, beloved not because of what we do or don't do, but because of who we are. In part two, we'll see that once we know ourselves, we're primed for change, for transformation. But before we get there, we must feel our pain so we can get in touch with our humanity, stop distancing ourselves from the hurt of the world, and instead allow it to work in us and through us. And in part three, we'll see that if we do the work of internal transformation spurred on by our unexpected circumstances, we can discover who God wants us to become. Each chapter, then, is divided into three sections. The first is where I tell you my unexpected story in hopes you will see yourself and your own story there. The second is titled The Gift. Here, I lean on scripture, research, and metaphor to draw out the lessons I've learned from the unexpected along the way. It's important to note that I was not learning these lessons in the first few chapters, the chapters where I'm wrecked with grief. They came with time, prayer, reading, good counsel, reflection, and ultimately, undergoing. And finally, under the heading, The Gift of You, I provide journaling questions to help you reflect on who you were during the heat of the unexpected, who you are now in regard to the topic of the chapter, and who you want to become in light of these unexpected lessons. You will also be able to dig deep and discover the gift of the unexpected, discovering who you were meant to be. God will set our unexpected transformations to purpose, but only if we are willing to participate. This path of the unexpected life is steep, twisty, and at times lovely. And although the road is long and some points are scary, we arrive at overlooks now and again where the views are extraordinary. But we must walk it. We must be bold enough to face our realities, both past and present, to get to the place where God wants us to arrive. And when we get there, to our new beginning, we can't help but also look back to see how He made our lives over again from dust. One more time. Dear listener, you will hear me say that my grief about my unexpected moment was based on ignorance. It was based on my faulty beliefs of what constitutes a good and worthy life. Nevertheless, the subsequent grief was real. You see, the 22nd phone call that knocked me to the floor did break my life apart. I just didn't realize how God would use those pieces. He pulled most of them back, swept some away, and added new ones. The result has been an evolving picture that has more beauty and depth than I could have ever imagined. The unexpected gave me my son, Anderson. And in doing so, it also gave me, me. Let's begin unwrapping to discover the gift that awaits you, that through the unexpected, you can become who God always imagined you to be. Part 1. The Gift of Returning to Yourself. Owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing that we will ever do. Brené Brown, The Gifts of Imperfection. Chapter 1, Breaking Open. Many of the happiest moments of my life run together in a brightly colored blur. I remember the delight I felt when, surprised, I walked up to a white blanket, pink roses, and Andy down on one knee waiting for me. But I don't recall his exact words when he asked me to marry him. I remember sitting in my white gown, overjoyed and even giddy, while laughing at my dad's toast during our wedding reception. But I can't recall the content. I remember the ecstasy-riddled joy I felt just after seeing our first child's fresh pink skin for the first time. But I don't recall the words Andy and I spoke to each other as Violet lay on my chest after delivery. But when I look back at my worst moments, I am haunted by the smallest details. The years 2013 and 2014 had already been laced with the unexpected. Andy graduated dental school on an Air Force scholarship, and soon after he moved his tassel, the military sent us from Augusta, Georgia, to Las Vegas, Nevada, for a one-year residency program. Then, after spending hours toiling over what to put on our dream sheet, a list of our preferred locations for our next assignment, we opened an envelope with orders to a location that felt more like a nightmare, Alamogordo, New Mexico. Alamogordo is where they tested the first atomic bomb in 1945, and this news felt like a bomb of our own had gone off, blowing up the scripts we'd written in our heads for what the near future would look like, particularly for me. Moving to Alamogordo meant no chance of going back to my career as a TV journalist. We had no idea the plot was about to become so twisted that we wouldn't even recognize the story as our own. We would think this was the kind of narrative that belonged to other people, not us. Although now I am so grateful our stories played out the way they have, at the time, I couldn't see how anything good could come from these unscripted parts of our lives. Thankfully, I was wrong. Thankfully, this was the beginning of unlearning and learning, of breaking and stretching, of changing and transforming. 8 days after we arrived in our new and remote town, I was 20 weeks pregnant with our second child and in the waiting room at a new OBGYN's office for my anatomy scan. The ultrasound technician greeted Andy and me and escorted us to her examination room. She had short, sun-kissed hair and skin to match, and there was something gentle about her that I liked right away. She asked me to pull up my silky top. I took a deep breath. My chest expanded against my skin, and for the first time in weeks, I felt centered. In the chaos of moving, and the disappointment about where we had landed, I had nearly forgotten I was carrying a miracle inside me. She took her white squeeze bottle out of its holster and covered my midsection with warm aquamarine goo, then untangled her wand to show us a glimpse of our future. Another baby. "It's a boy," she concluded almost immediately. Andy cried happy tears. I cried too. And for a few minutes, everything was perfect. In our young married years, we'd daydream about our future family. We'd picked out names for both sons and daughters yet to be. And now the dream was becoming reality. Our family portrait would be what we wanted it to be. As I stared at the smooth white ceiling above, pondering the nuances of a brother-sister relationship between children less than 2 years apart, I didn't realize how much time had passed. The technician had me turn on my side to get the last measurement, and when she got it, she thanked us, flipped on the lights, and walked out the door. A cheery nurse bounced into our room minutes later and said, "Well, the doctor isn't here, so everything must look great." But as soon as she said those words, he walked in wearing the traditional white coat and a concerned look on his face. "We need to discuss some things on the ultrasound," he said. He pulled up the screen and pointed to the black and white image. "You see here a bright spot on the baby's heart? The heart appears to be working fine, but this spot can sometimes indicate other things may be wrong." He continued to tell us that our baby also had a thickened nuchal fold, a fold of skin at the back of the neck. The measurement was only slightly off, but still enlarged. He explained that with those two markers, our baby had an increased chance of having one of the more common trisomies, 13, 18, or 21. "What does that mean?" I asked. "It means your baby could have a genetic condition like Down syndrome." The room grew blurry, and my back broke out in fire. As the doctor's voice began sounding like one of those monotone adults in the animated versions of Peanuts. I couldn't concentrate on what he was saying because the thought, "I can't be a special needs mom. I can't be a special needs mom," played in my head over and over again like a skipping CD. The doctor explained that a new blood test was on the market and we would have the results in about 2 weeks. The scene was still blurry and began to spin, but somehow, with Andy's help, I managed to walk to the lab. They took my blood, and then we waited. Waiting admits a lack of control. The situation was out of our hands. Yet, as we waited for the blood test results, we tried to grab the power in a powerless fight. We told ourselves a podunk Alamogordo hospital probably didn't have the best technology and booked an ultrasound appointment in El Paso, the largest nearby city. Once again, I lifted my shirt, but this time I shuddered as the new ultrasound technician squeezed the familiar blue goo across my midsection. And then there he was again, our son, dressed in black and white. His spine wiggled and his hand stretched across the nice office's big projection screen. I wanted to love him, but now I was afraid of falling. She measured his nuchal fold and looked at his heart. "This baby is completely normal," she concluded. Normal. Dear listener, this is the only time you'll hear me use the term special needs. From the disability community, I've learned that the word disability is preferred. But in this case, I want you to know the very real thoughts I had in this moment. When I was a senior in high school, my parents sat me down in a New York City restaurant while we were on vacation, some cozy little spot in Little Italy. "Jill, if you want to do this, we'll support you," my mom said. My parents were offering to move me to the city to pursue a Broadway musical career instead of a journalism degree, but I dismissed the idea immediately. I wanted the wild and free college experience. I wanted the big football school and frat parties. I also knew my parents had a bloated confidence in my talents. Maybe I had the singing voice, but I couldn't dance and could barely act. It would take a lot of classes to get me there, and I wasn't sure if I had it anyway. But really, that type of move was too out there for me, too risky. I wanted just a notch above normal, and a TV journalism career would be the perfect mix of flashy and practical. Now, normal sounded extremely appealing. But with only a 6-day gap between ultrasounds, how could the results be so different? Like a pendulum, I swung into times of self-affirmed peace and just as quickly into doubt. I remember when the pendulum stopped swinging. A storm brewed above the mountain behind our home. The 8 more days of waiting for the blood test results had started to bubble up my emotions, and I was about to burst. My mom, who'd come from Florida to help us unpack, and I were sitting on the porch when tears of frustration and fear started trickling down my cheeks. "All day long, I felt like he does have something," I choked out. There was a slight pause as my mom didn't know what to say. Who would? But then she suddenly spoke, pointing. "Look! As soon as you said that, a rainbow appeared." I turned around to peer at the colorful view in the still cloudy sky, then hung my head. I don't think that's a good sign. I thought God was telling me he was still there, but I wouldn't get the news I wanted. The next day, Andy came home for lunch in a good mood. He liked his new dental clinic, and my ever-optimistic husband believed we would get good news about the blood test that day and this ordeal would be over. I hid my doubts as I kissed him goodbye and handed him his hat. He went back to work. I was still cleaning up from lunch when my phone rang. It was Andy. "The doctor called me, and it's not good. I'm coming home. I dropped the phone, and that's when my 22
Sample complete. Ready to continue?